Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday and happy Halloween, Elizabeth.
Happy Halloween, Hank. I don't think we've ever done a Halloween show together.
So you've never seen me in what I do for Halloween, in my finery.
I've never seen you in such a wonderful costume. Are you going as a radio host?
Yes, I'm wearing a gray t-shirt with Kirkland blue jeans. So it's quite a costume. It took me a while to put this together this morning.
But I recognized who you were trying to be right away, so it must be working for you. But yeah, we've never done a Halloween show. We've been here for Christmas Eve, and we've been here for 4th of July. We're kind of working our way through all of the, I wouldn't say holidays, because technically Halloween is not a holiday. It does have a storied past, but it is one of the more family-friendly days of the year, which is so interesting because it sits right in this place of being about frightening each other to death or feeling afraid, and yet it's one of the most popular children's day of the year. How did that come to be? And it was funny because this weekend I was in Boise, Idaho, visiting friends, and there's a whole street where each neighbor tries to outdo the other neighbor with their horrifying front yard. And you know how people do it around Christmas time with all their moving animatron beings. Yep. They had some of the most terrifying, I would say rivaling Disney or, you know, any House of Horrors you've ever seen. And the street was lined with people with their little tiny children walking down the street. And so there's something really interesting about that being terrified or frightened is that children as young as 3 and 4 are actually able to differentiate fantasy from reality. Which is surprising because most people think it's too frightening. I mean, for some children, it can be scary. But if parents talk to them about it or explain this, it's just make-believe that they really have the capacity. And then on some level, they're really fascinated by all of kind of the scary death themes, which I think speaks to young children's and children's curiosity about the whole cycle of life and death. So I was thinking about what we should do today in honor of Halloween, or to kind of bring in the theme of Halloween. So I thought we could talk a little bit about Halloween and whether or not it's good for our mental health and well-being. For children, as I said, the opportunity to dress up and use their imagination and try on a different personality is really great for them. It's wonderful to have a time to maybe try on a scary costume and be that scary monster under the bed that they're usually afraid of, kind of take over that power to take the fear back. So there's those healthy aspects. One of the downsides of Halloween and old Halloween traditions is that it continues to actually push those stigmas about mental health or mental illness. Because if you think about some of the scenes they create for frightening haunted houses, quite often they're in an insane asylum, right? They show the person in the straight jacket with, you know, dazed eyes. And it's unfortunate that we continue to push those stereotypes or those visions of mental illness, because it doesn't really help in our efforts to destigmatize mental health and to make people feel emboldened or empowered to come out and seek help. When you see those images of people considered the crazy, dangerous people, it makes people who are struggling want to hide. So there's the good and the bad with Halloween. I was thinking about talking about All Hallows Eve and kind of the ancient Celtic tradition from which it arises, those pagan traditions when that veil between the living and the dead gets most thin. It's at the end of the harvest and moving into the darker times of the year. The pagan traditions were at some point co-opted by the Christian traditions, which were co-opted by commercialisms. And here we got to this. And I thought, well, that's an interesting topic. But then I started thinking about death, which is kind of the overriding part of the Halloween tradition. All Saints Day, Day of the Dead. The costumes, they're supposed to be frightening, the reapers, the grim reapers, and all the scary images of death. And thinking the thing that's interesting about Halloween is that the one time a year we can actually talk about death in certain areas. We're not talking directly about death, but the whole kind of theme of death is there. And it's not so frightening to just out of the blue talk about death and what it's about and what happens to you. And the thing that's interesting is that although we've gotten to a point where we're more comfortable talking about the process of dying, dying with dignity, you know, palliative care, a hospice, we'll talk about that process of dying, but it's still very much taboo to talk about death. Actual death and what happens to the body. And we have this tradition of kind of coming in and whisking the body away so no one sees the person who is dead, and we fear seeing dead people. I mean, I haven't really been exposed to dead people. It's something that is hidden behind the curtains or behind the door or in funeral homes. And it's unfortunate because when you take something that's such a natural part of life, which is death, the end of the life cycle, and we hide from it, we shroud death in mystery, it makes the fear of death even greater. It makes it even more overwhelming. And so I thought today would be a good day to kind of break that taboo a little bit and talk about death and what we think happens to us once we die. And the other question is, what do you want to do with your body? What do you want to have done with your body once you die? I mean, do you ever think about that?
Sure.
Okay. So what do you think happens to you once you die?
Well, what I think happens, and in my mind, I'm 100% sure, is that that's all she wrote. But I mean,
You shut your eyes and...
Yeah, I mean, you cease to exist, nothing happens, and your body becomes something that somebody else has to deal with. And but I recognize that many people have different beliefs, and like my mother, who passed away about 5-6 years ago, had a very strong religious faith, and you know, she was just as positive as I am that there's nothing, that there is something, and there's a heaven and afterlife and all that. So, and that provided great comfort to her as she got older and approached the end. So I envied her that she was so happy to be moving on. I mean, I think when my time comes, I'll be probably kind of scared, but I'm more scared of the dying, not the being dead part.
Right. The if pain. It takes a long process.
Yeah, if it's long and drawn out and painful and I lose, you know, bodily functions and things like that, that's what I'm afraid of. Once the heart stops, then
you're okay.
I'm done. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to fear because there's nothing, nothing beyond that in my mind. And I realize that that's my personal belief, not necessarily those of anyone else.
But that's what makes it an interesting conversation, because there are such wide varieties of views. There's so many different ways to view and, you know, where we go once we die. But then there will be your body to contend with. So what do you want to have happen?
I want to be disposed of in the most cost-efficient way possible. Probably cremation. I've thought about having my ashes sprinkled on the $2 craps table at the El Cortez in Las Vegas, but that would probably be frowned upon by management, even at the El Cortez. But realistically, I would probably want to be cremated and put on a shelf or something.
So you want to have some sort of urn, or maybe, Bierstein.
Yeah, Bierstein would be good.
I think a customized Bierstein containing
I'll be
tank.
Gone, so I don't really care.
Because as far as you're concerned, once it's over, it's over.
Right.
And the body's just the vessel that carried you around.
Yeah,
for the last...
and if my family wants to gather and remember me, that's fine, but not necessary.
So does the conversation make you uncomfortable? The fact that we're having the conversation about death and your body and cremation?
Not so much.
No?
I mean, probably 10, 15 years ago it would have, but I've dealt with it a bit with my mom and kind of am realistic about it now. I mean, it's going to happen to all of us. And
did you see your mom when she was dead?
Mm-hmm.
When was that frightening?
Well, the hospital called and said it's probably time to come see her. And it was in the middle of the night. And she was breathing, and then she wasn't breathing. And it was very peaceful. But, I mean, we didn't dwell on it once she wasn't breathing anymore. We kind of said her goodbye and kissed her on the cheek. And
they take her away?
Told the nurse, okay, we're done. And
you know, and that's when kind of things get mysterious and get whisked away
yeah.
into other rooms.
And then the next thing, we were in the... meeting with a mortician, and that's when we saw the wall of caskets where you could spend tens of thousands of dollars on mahogany and bronze, or you could get a cardboard box. And
you went with?
We went with the cardboard box.
Well, and it's interesting. I was reading, you know, to get prepared for today, that for most consumers, a funeral will be one of the biggest purchases they ever make, which is ironic because if you're going to say in your lifetime, but you won't be here.
Right. What I enjoyed, and it was not an enjoyable process, as you can imagine, but what I enjoyed when you got to the lower end on the cardboard box end of the spectrum, there was, I think the brown cardboard box was like $80. But then if you didn't want to be super, super cheap, you could get a cardboard box with wood grain painting on it for like $90. So like an extra $10 if you want the wood grain faux finish.
So like all things, it has become such an industry that you almost feel like you're selling your loved one short if you don't get buy up the rack. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so that's where we're going today for our Halloween edition for this conversation of this conversation with the reluctant therapist. What is it that you think happens to you once you die? And have you thought about that? I think more people think about what happens to them once they die than who think about what then happens to their body. So I don't think that question will be too difficult. I think a lot of people have thoughts about that. And then the other question is, what would you like to do with your body? What will be your burial ritual once you're gone? You can be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also be a part of the show by liking our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can leave us a message there. You can find out about upcoming shows. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can podcast the show by visiting Apple Podcasts and searching A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, or visiting NPR One, which has a list of many, many podcasts that are available as well as ours. And I think that's it. I think I'm looking forward to hearing where this conversation goes today. So we will take a break, slide into a little what might be considered cliche music for today's show. And we'll be back to take your calls at 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. It's Halloween, and so we're going to talk about death. And I'm curious to know what you think happens once you die, and then what would you like to have happen to your body? 805-781-3875. Hi, Susan. You're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi there. Hi. I think our consciousness goes on, and we continue to evolve. And I've been able to be in touch with some people who are now out of the body, and that was surprising to me, but lots of things that I've brought through were validated by people that I didn't know, being a medium. And I would like my body to get used by somebody. Mm-hmm. It might be kind of old, but, you know, if somebody could use my eyeballs or my liver or something, that'd be great.
And are you a medium yourself, or did you go to a medium and have these experiences?
Yes, I am one.
Oh, you are? Okay. Mm-hmm. So this summer...
It was stuff that I couldn't really know or get, you know. I mean, I had no idea, but people heard from me and validated it. So something's going on, you know.
You're feeling the energy.
I think what happens at the point of death is that you have already created what that is, that the things that you feel will happen that will comfort you mm-hmm. show up to help you, mm-hmm. you know, with that transition. You know, if that's Jesus or your mom, you know, I think those things show up to comfort you on that major transition. But I think your involvement goes on.
And are you comfortable then with the process of aging and death because you have this awareness?
Yeah, very comfortable. Yeah, very comfortable, sure. I'm not comfortable with when your body is trying to get a breath and it's over. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen people have that kind of gasping, or people who have a lot of regrets. You know, I'm always kind of interested in what people have in terms of end-of-life issues, you know. Mm-hmm. Mostly they wish they hadn't worked so much, and number two is they wish they'd kept in touch with family and friends. So, but anyway, you know, when the body is trying to gasp for air, actually my feeling is you're already out. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you're, you know, and a lot of people who I've tuned into at the point of like car accident or some major thing, and if you really think about it in your own life, if you've ever had that, you really are not in the body at the moment of impact. Mm-hmm. You know, you come back in and then you feel the pain. So you may be observing or whatever when your car crashes into a tree. But at the moment, you're not really in there, you know? So we're spared from some of that kind of trauma. Well, so maybe you're not even in there when your body's trying to catch a breath, you know?
At the end, it's just that physical
act. But I'm
very
encouraged.
Yeah. Thank you, Susan. Thank you for starting us off today, and happy Halloween. So what is happening when we die? What do you think happens to your, do you believe you have a soul? Do you believe that you continue on? Or like Hank said, is it just over once you closed your eyes? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Hi. I just wanted to say that 2 years ago, my mother passed away. And in dealing with morticians, we found out some really interesting things I think most people aren't aware of. And one of them is that the only two things really required are that you need a death certificate, and that if they're going to be buried, they need to be buried in a cemetery or graveyard, you know, like outdoor burials. But other than that, you know, if you want to put them on ice in your front room or drive them yourself to the morgue or whatever, you're totally free to do that. So it's very unregulated business, and on the unregulated side, mortuaries can charge anything they want, mm-hmm. and they can change prices on a whim. And like we were quoted $1,200 for one service, and 2 months later they said, "Well, that's going to be $3,300." And I asked them why. And the mortician let it slip that, well, she died at this time of year. And they said, well, the season has started.
The death season.
The death season. And the mm-hmm. death season being from basically Halloween through Valentine's Day.
Mm. And so what do you think happens once you die?
Well, it is the mystery, isn't it?
It is the mystery.
You know, I'll probably have as much memory as I have since before I was born, which isn't much. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, who knows?
I know. And it's interesting because we talk about, you know, we talk about those taboo subjects. We're not supposed to talk about sex or money or politics, and death is one of them. And as a society, we've actually gotten more comfortable talking about sex and politics and money, but the whole death conversation is still really difficult. And I think that's probably why the funeral business is able to kind of create their own reality and their own business model, because no one really wants to talk about these things beforehand. It's, you might talk about what it is to go through and buy a car in the process, but we don't talk about the going through the funeral arrangements.
Yeah, you're not, you know, you don't think about comparative shopping.
No, exactly.
At that time, but you know, we found that, you know, some morticians were very nice and some made attorneys look like Girl Scouts. You know, they were fairly unscrupulous at a time when people were vulnerable.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling, Frank. And, you know, that's a good point when you're thinking about death and what happens when we die and what would you like to have happen with your body, that it's probably be a good idea to do prearranging, to go in and have these conversations in a mortuary, maybe make all those arrangements beforehand when you're not in a state of heightened emotions, when you're a little more clear thinking, and have them all set aside. And I would imagine that there are people who have done that, who have put together an elaborate plan that's ready to go when they die. But for the majority of people, they don't have this conversation with their loved ones. They don't have this conversation with themselves because there's so much fear around death, especially if you don't have comfort with what's going to happen after you die. And as a society, you know, we really hide death for fear of catching it somehow, that if we were to talk about it, it makes us more prone to death, or being around people who are dying somehow makes us feel more vulnerable. And so it just becomes hidden and shrouded away, and that great mystery makes it more frightening. So what do you think happens once you die? And what is it that you would like to do with your body once you're dead? 805-781-3875. Hi, William. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, how are you? When I first started listening, I was kind of blown away, and it was, you know, spooky kooky for the day. But it's funny. I've always felt like I've called myself a God-fearing agnostic, which puts me in this kind of centered place between, Hank's comment of it's over and there's no more, and then the other side is, you know, growing up or with a Christian Catholic surrounding and the belief of the afterlife and, you know, reuniting with others. But from a very young age, my main thing was, no one wanted to talk about it. My parents didn't want to talk about it. And I remember incredible anxiety as a young boy, actually, even before I was even, you know, maybe a 10-year-old child, really trying to figure it out and asking these questions, and nobody wanted to answer it. I've never felt any kind of, comfort or release of that fear. I wonder if there's anybody could speak to how do you alleviate some of that fear?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question, because it is, you know, aside from speaking in public, which is still the number one fear that people have, death is number two. And it is so much about not understanding kind of the process of death and dying, being around death. You know, when we don't see something happening, when we don't participate in the rituals or the traditions around death, they become more frightening. And that's what's so interesting about children. You know, they're very comfortable around dead animals. They are very curious when the pets die. You know, they want to have a funeral. We mm-hmm. build in that anxiety about death into children, just as you talked about. No one would discuss it with you. And when you're young, you are much closer to understanding the whole cycle of life. So some of the suggestions that I would have are to get close to the process of death. To mm-hmm. be with someone through the process of dying, you know, to hold their hand, to kind of put, it's like all things that we mm-hmm. fear, put yourself into that place of fear so that you can face it.
I have had that experience, sadly, on a multitude of times. And in that moment, I project maybe a little bit of what's happening within, you know, my loved one's ending moments, thinking that, you know, within that, right before that, you feel the anxiety building up within them too, mm-hmm. that unknown in that moment. Mm-hmm. I've witnessed this on a couple occasions. Sometimes it seems like a gentle release, and sometimes it seems like they're hanging on. And, mm-hmm. you know, and then kind of watching and viewing that just builds up the fear again. You think,
So it's not helping.
Where's that answer?
It's not helping you. Well, and I like to do a lot of reading about death and what happens after death. And this summer I was in a town called Lilydale, New York, which is inhabited by mediums, and all sorts of people go to visit mediums to talk to their loved ones. For my own kind of anxiety about death, I've tried to understand and visit and talk to and be a part of as many rituals and traditions and people's experience of death and dying and the understanding of what might happen afterwards, that helps. And then the other piece, the older mm-hmm. we get, it's so important to review our life and look back, that people who have the least amount of anxiety around death are those who are most at peace with the way they've lived their life. And so people who look back without regrets, or, you know, are able to say, hey, I really have made my mark here, or, oh, there are things that I did that were worthwhile, that you can really actually get to a point where you say, and I'm good now. Like, mm-hmm. I've had my time here.
Building our legacy is part of part of that conference.
The release, absolutely. And being able to sit and review it and look over it, share it with another person, write it down, why writing our memoirs are such an important part of our mental health process in accepting death and dying, is to actually come to a place where you can truly say, I've done my thing here. And then everything after this is golden.
Well, that's pretty great. Well, thank you. I love the show.
Thank you, William. Thanks for taking the time to call in. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. In honor of Halloween, I thought we'd talk about death, one of our most taboo subjects that we have. And I wanted to know what people thought about what happens to them once they die, and then what their death ritual would be, because I'm fascinated by all the things we can do with our bodies. I personally would like to be composted. I would like a green burial in a forest, with, you know, kind of buried low in the ground so the oxygen can help compost my body. That's important part of it. And then a tree planted to carry on. I mean, that's kind of my picture, this kind of pastoral scene. And so my husband and I were talking about our plans, and I said, you need to come with me to the station so you can tell me what it is you want and be part of the conversation. So my husband, Chris, is here with us today. Hi, honey.
Hi. In case the joke answer was, I would want to be preserved and lie in state in our bed because of the respect due me of all I've done in my life. Mm-hmm. But in addition, so that there's no room in our bed for anyone else after I'm gone.
So just like forever you live stuffed. Like, what is it called when you stuff your pet? To keep a stuffed husband.
You go to a taxidermy.
Yes, you're going to be taxidermied and kept with me forever. So, but in all honesty, though, because you had talked about in the past sea burials, and I was looking at them, and there are a couple options that you have. One is a reef burial, where they take you and they kind of form you into a sphere, and then you're attached to a reef, and you become.
Well, that's a great idea. I like that idea. I would want to go back into the natural world, mm-hmm. Similar to what you had in mind, being buried. I'd want to be buried in a simple pine box kind of thing, not in a concrete vault, so that my the nutrients from my body contribute back to the earth in a more timely manner than being in a concrete vault that would take 1,000 years for them to transmit into the earth. Or that, or be buried at sea, but not most of the burials at sea are ashes. Just, and I think you have to get out in international waters before you just dump a body. I'd want to be weighted. And
you can go 3 miles offshore, right, and get weighted and then drop to 600 feet. And if you're in a shroud, it's better than in a casket of any kind, because caskets are harder to sink. I don't want you to think that I've been looking it up for you.
Sounds like you have.
but that's the sea burial. And then the other one I thought was interesting was the tradition in South Korea of creating death beads, because they have a lack of space for actual formal traditional burials. And if you want to be buried in a casket in South Korea, you have to come get your casket 60 years later to make room for other people. So in South Korea, they've moved more towards cremation, and then they take the ashes and they compress them into gem-like beads that are like turquoise and pink and black, and they can be displayed at home or worn. I think that would be nice to be beaded in some way. I don't know. 805-781-3875. What do you think happens once you die?
And you didn't ask me that.
I will ask you next. And where would you like your body disposed? How would you like your body disposed of? Which sounds so crass, but yet in all of the research that I was perusing for the show, they talk about disposal of the body, which is not very romantic. Anna, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I can actually talk about this for all day. I just want to tell your husband about his idea of being in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. I think he's forgetting that he will be dead. And when you come home with this really super hot guy, you're just going to, like, throw him in the closet somewhere. Like, even worse, they'll put him in the garage outside.
Don't ruin his story, Anna. This is going to be...
Fine. Please don't know.
No, you know, I actually been a critical care nurse for 15 years, and I also did hospice for a while. And I tell you, death has been such a part of my life for the last 15 years. And I think it's cultural. You know, some people, like in American culture, I'm Hispanic, and I see how in the Hispanic culture, people are very loud and they have, you know, a lot of expression. And then they move on, you know. They do their grieving, their rituals, and, you know, they do the 9 days of praying and that sort of thing. But American culture, we don't have that. And in American culture, what I notice is that people are more, they're quiet. They're very, you know, they keep their feelings inside. But that's what happens when you die. I think it all depends on your beliefs, you know, where you are in life. Mm-hmm. And some people go through life. I've had patients who, you know, focus so much on making money and working and believing that, you know, I don't believe in God and this sort of thing. And then when they're dying, they actually are so, so afraid of what is afterwards because it's the unknown. You know, do you just die and you're gone, or do you, I don't know what it is. I mean, is it fear of being forgotten? Is it fear of what happens to your soul if you believe in the soul, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's very, it's a fascinating topic.
Well, and I would imagine when you work as you do as a hospice nurse, that you have your own very strong feelings about what happens. I mean, have you changed what you believe in doing this work, or have you always had a pretty strong sense? And what is that?
You know, I am a nurse, and for me, being a nurse is about providing the patient with what their needs are, whether are physical, spiritual, emotional, whatever their needs are. I am personally agnostic, but I tell you, when I encounter a patient, the first thing I ask about a patient is what are their religious beliefs? And I try to educate myself about their beliefs, because in that moment when they're transitioning, I want to be able to provide them with the spiritual care they deserve and they need, even though they're not my beliefs. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, I had a patient whose daughter was dying of cancer. She was 30 years old. And the father looks at me and he said, "Can I ask you," he said, "why God is punishing me?" And he said, "by taking my little girl." And I looked at him. I held his hand and I said, "You know, God is not punishing you." I said, "God gave you a loan." And I said, "You've done such a fine job caring for it." I said that. Now, I said, he needs an angel in heaven to take care of everybody down here. And I said, and he found the perfect one. And he just looked at me and tears rolling down his face, you know, and says, "Thank you for your kind words." I mean, I don't have to be a believer to be able to comfort somebody, you know?
I agree. And I think it's our presence at that time and mm-hmm. and having confidence that everything is going to be okay. I think that's a big part of death and death rituals, is that, again, that idea is if we fear it and hang on, we're not delaying the inevitable. It still comes, but it's just such a painful transition. And so if you can be that person who holds the space and let people feel what they're feeling and let the grief flow, because I think a lot of the fear is being overcome so deeply by grief that we never find our way back. And that's a whole nother piece of it. But Anna, thank you for taking the time to call, and thank you for the work that you do helping people through these times.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You know, a couple other death rituals that I found interesting, we talked about my husband becoming a reef ball, being compressed into a sphere and then attached to an ocean reef. But there's also the Mongolian and Tibetan traditions of the sky burial, because in Tibet, you know, there's very little wood to burn. And so, and their belief is that when you die, there's a transmigration of your spirit. Your soul moves out of the body and on into the world, up into the heavens, I guess. And the body is just this empty vessel. So they take the dead up to the top of the mountains and chop the body up so it kind of is there and available for vultures and for the elements to decompose. So that's,
I like it.
That's an option. And I also, whatever I end up doing, if I'm buried and composted in a forest, I do want to have some element of a jazz funeral, with some sort of parade with music.
Oh, really? Like New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans jazz funeral of some kind. Just put that in your notes. Mm-hmm. 805-781-3875. Hi, Sean. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I don't know if you've touched on it in the show, but I was listening to a podcast of a funeral director, and she was speaking about how so many people, when somebody dies, they get overtaken and by sort of the logistics of everything, mm-hmm. and the body gets taken away very quickly, and they're almost in this shock of they haven't had time with the body. Mm-hmm. And she's a funeral director in L.A., so she's in California, and she spoke to being able to actually legally sit with the body for a set number of days before you have someone from the morgue come take them or from the funeral director to come take them. Mm-hmm. And I just, like your caller before was saying, I could talk about this all day long. And I love the idea of being able to sit with a loved one mm-hmm. after they've died mm-hmm. and invite friends over and do something of a, I know you can do a home funeral, but to be able to sit with a body just sounds very beautiful to me. And she was speaking that something in the psyche begins to understand that your loved one has passed.
Right.
And it helps with that moment of that they're never coming back again. And she found that a lot of families and a lot of people that do that, that sit with their loved ones for a certain amount of time, that it has really helped. And she said that often, on the whole, most people after, she said, no more than 12 hours, sort of like get it. Mm-hmm. And then they call and somebody comes and takes their loved one away. But I just wanted to add that to the conversation in case that's something that didn't get touched on.
No, I hadn't. I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to talk about the mental health benefits of sitting with your dead loved one, because there is exactly what you talked about. The psyche has to be able to process the overwhelm of what's happening, and there has to be enough time to process the actual traumatic experience, right, to do with that, to come to terms with it, to get our nervous system, you know, back in order. I mean, there's so many things that happen physically, emotionally, mentally, that to have that time to sit and be at peace and have your final conversations or to touch them and kiss them one more time. And we do tend to, as in all things in our culture, do everything much too quickly. We force people through decision making and, you know, grieving and processing just much too quickly. And then we wonder why people spend such a long time grieving afterwards or having a hard time moving forward, because there was never that moment of transition. And it goes with
we spend time playing catch up.
You're always playing catch up, or you're always wondering why you're still traumatized or feeling grief, because shouldn't I be over it by now? Everyone says I should be over it. And it's every transition we go through in life, whether it's a wedding, a funeral, a graduation, they all have similar pieces to the tradition. You know, you walk down the aisle, there's, you know, the funeral march or the wedding march or the graduation march, where you're leaving one reality and moving to a new reality. And then you go through the ceremony of whatever that ceremony is, whether it's the funeral ceremony, right, or the wedding ceremony or the graduation ceremony. And then you turn and you leave down that aisle a changed person. Once you've been through the funeral, you are a changed person in the world, because this loved one has left. After graduation, you're now a graduate. After a wedding ceremony, you're now married. Like, there's a reason why all of these ceremonies and traditions are the way they are, and it's to help us process in our psyche so that our mental health can be ready for whatever comes next. So, Sean, thank you for calling. Thank you for calling and bringing that up, reminding me. Happy Halloween to you. And the conversation today about death and about death rituals, and I'm not trying to make light of it, but I think in some ways there has to be kind of that mix of joy and terror and fear and sorrow and happiness. I mean, because that's kind of actually what life is like. Nothing is all good or all bad. Nothing just happens and it's just joyful or just horrible. You know, to be able to understand that there is life within death, that life carries on, that how we honor those who have died really kind of sets in motion our ability to go on in our lives once they're gone. So the question on the table today is, what do you think happens once you die? And what would you like to do with your body? In Ghana, they have a practice of creating fantasy coffins. So these coffins represent what your life work was, or it can be something that you loved in your life. So they've had caskets made in the shape of like a Mercedes Benz or of a guitar case, and then that's where your final resting place is. And then a lot of people talk about, you know, being cremated and what we do with the ashes and where does that urn go. And remember, we had friends when we were younger who their grandmother was in an urn, and they would take her on vacations and took pictures of the urn in different places and then send them to each other. I mean, so there is some kind of humor and joy and laughter amongst all the sorrows in our life. Hi, Mary, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, great. Hi, thank you. Well, I just wanted to let you know my interesting plans for my body. When I was in college, this would have been, oh, I guess I was maybe 23. I'm an artist. I made my effigy urn from a wax casting of my face, which I then put into a Grecian urn, cast the whole thing in bronze, and that is where my ashes will go. And I have an inscription on it. I'm not sure I'm going to remember it, but it says something like, death is not the enemy of life, but its friend. For it is death that reminds us that life is a gift in our temporary keeping. And a lot of people responded to my project as being morbid, but for me, it was very life-affirming, knowing that I wasn't going to be here forever. So now I'm 62. And, you know, kind of staring down the barrel of getting in that urn in the next, who knows, could be 20 years. And I have the urn in my living room. It sits on my fireplace hearth. And I'm hoping to be able to put that urn at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, where they do a fabulous Day of the Dead celebration. Thousands of people come, and I would love to have my urn on display in some kind of a niche or something. So that's my story.
And I'm curious, do you believe that you'll be there kind of floating around the urn in some way spiritually, or when you're gone, you're gone?
Well, you know, I'm not 100% when you're gone, you're gone.
Okay.
I think that there are essences. I'm living in a house right now where somebody passed, an older woman. It was her time. But it doesn't feel like other houses I've lived in, and I am not a medium kind of person. But there's something strange going on there. And I do think that we go on in some form. I don't believe so much in the basic heaven and hell scenario. I kind of feel that we are energy at its purest. Mm-hmm. And when we die, we shed our bodies, we shed all our mental issues. If we were a drug user, you would shed that. You would just shed everything and go back to that essential electrical energy, or just energy that flows through everything, kind of a chi sort of thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It would be kind of cool if I was floating around my urn, especially there. It's a beautiful cemetery, and I also do Day of the Dead artwork, which I've done for years. It's one of my favorite holidays, second only to Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Well,
I'm in my pirate costume today.
Well, and I appreciate your embracing of your death. And I wonder, you know, having created the urn and having seen it in your house all these years and to look at it, that it normalizes that whole process of living and dying. And when it just becomes a part of the cycle, how much more joy we get out of actual the life we have, as you said. So that's, would you ever create your own resting place ahead of time, or create, you know, would you write your own obituary or create your own headstone?
Maybe. I think that's an interesting idea. I think it's a great idea. That if you know you want to be in an urn and you made it yourself, you know where you're going to be, I think it's great.
But then now I'm getting confused because I like the idea of being compressed into death beads and having the girls wear them. I like the idea of, though, being composted into a forest and a tree growing out of me. But then I also kind of like the idea of being, you know, in a special urn someplace beautiful. So now I have too many things that I'm curious about. And then don't forget, I want the New Orleans jazz funeral on top of all that, but not...
Yeah, we can have the New Orleans jazz funeral regardless.
No matter what. It's just, and then we haven't talked about, of course, not wanting to spend a lot of money, because then that kind of cheapens, I think, the whole spiritual aspect of dying, that the birth should be this beautiful mm-hmm. entrance into the world that you live your life, and then there should be a beautiful exit, and it shouldn't be about... like the money, the funds. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist on Halloween, and we're talking about death and death rituals and what would you like to do with your body once you die. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Elizabeth. Yeah, I'm enjoying your program. And from my aspect, I take the traditional Christian view. I think that the Lord is the one that gave us life, and when we leave this life, I believe that we will return back to Him. Mm-hmm. As far as what happens to the body, my wife and myself, she passed away a little over a year ago here at our home. Me and her and my kids were here. I held her hand and was talking to her and praying when she died. And she died a very easy death. We had got a spot to be buried in a traditional Christian type ceremony in the cemetery. And we believe that when you die, that you will go to the grave and you'll be there until the Lord calls. He said that when He would come again, that He would call the dead from the grave. The body, the spirit has already left. I believe the spirit leaves you at the last breath. When you draw the last breath, your spirit leaves. And I think instantly you're in the presence of God again. It's in heaven. And I don't know what people's concept of heaven is. It really doesn't matter to me where it is or what it is. But I do believe in the traditional Christian believe that God gave us life, and when we leave this life, our soul will go back to Him.
So, Jim, it sounds like you're at peace then with dying, and you're comfortable with whatever's coming next.
Very much, very mm-hmm. much at peace, and my wife was. At her funeral, I did her eulogy. We had talked all this over. I have no fear of death. I'm 83. And the first 30, 35 years of my life, I was not a believer. And you talk about death or what happens, I was very afraid of that subject and did not want to talk about it because I knew I would die someday, but it had a fearful effect to me, not knowing what happened. But when I got the peace of God and He showed me the whole plan, and gave me a tremendous peace. I have no regrets about my life, and I'm just waiting. I'm occupying here. And in fact, there's a scripture in the Bible that says, He says, occupy till I come. So that's my life now.
Jim, I really appreciate you calling and sharing your beliefs and your story. And I can hear in your voice that you're at peace with this and that you've kind of got this process. And a lot of people talk about wishing they had that same faith because there's something comforting in having that belief. And so I wish you well, and I thank you for taking the time to call. 805-781-3875. Hi, Paula, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Hi. Okay, I want to speak to, first of all, the death beads.
Yes.
I'm not sure I like that idea because I really don't want to end up in somebody's garage sale basket at some point.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
But when my father passed away, we talked about, he wanted to be cremated, so he was cremated. And then he was an avid golfer, and so we always joked about going up to Pebble Beach and, you know, little by little, handful by handful, letting him go into the sand traps in Pebble Beach. We never did that because that's illegal. But also, I was in the mortuary business for 13 years with my first husband. And, you know, we had to, you just had to be kind of you had to have a piece about it, about death, just working in that kind of a business. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, you respected people. To speak to what that one gentleman said about sitting with the body for days and stuff like that. In, if you don't understand the what happens to a body as it decomposes without being embalmed, you don't want to be sitting in a room with anybody who's passed away like that.
But if you keep it, because I was reading about the rituals or the ceremonies of sitting with the body for days, that they do refrigerate it or keep it iced, it helps.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you do it, but the breakdown of the body, I mean, you'd have to do something like that. You couldn't just have it
just hanging out,
state on a, on a bed or on a table or something. They'd eventually start melting into the bed, you know, so... So that's that. You're just like, that's not a reasonable thought, just like that. But you know, people do have, maybe will have the body embalmed and then have viewings and, you know, where they can come in and sit with the body, but it's been preserved. And then afterwards, have it cremated. And like, that's what we did with my father. My husband did the embalming and preparation of the body, and then we had the viewing and the service and everything, and then he was cremated. And we still have him in an urn, and he's in the living room, and my mom's 95, and we kind of joke about, well, what do you want to do, Mom? You know, when it's your time, you know, where do you guys want to end up? But yeah, so the whole idea of death and how you look at it, and how my daughter, who is she's 39 years old, and she is a very well-rounded young woman, very artistic, very intelligent. When we were living above a mortuary, because that's a lot of times you do, you live and you're on call every other night and blah, 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 to make first calls and stuff. And from the time she was like 4 years old, she was very curious, and she wanted to see the dead bodies, and she wanted to see the embalmings. And she would sit there with a coloring pad and, you know, sit and watch. And at that time also, there was no, in our area of Orange County where we lived at the time, there wasn't a coroner's facility. So the mortuaries were on a one-month rotation. And anyway, she would come in and sit and watch the autopsies. And the first time that happened, the coroner looked and he goes, should she be here? And he goes, my husband said, yeah, she's just fascinated by it, and she doesn't have a problem. Never had a nightmare, never had anything. She just accepted that, you know, this was all part of life and death. And it wasn't a big taboo. It wasn't, you know, anything that we were trying to hide from her. And it was, so it was just, you know, it was like maybe how it is in other cultures where in other parts of the world.
Right.
So it's not shunned. You're not afraid of it. It's just part of life.
Exactly.
And, so then you're not afraid of death. It's what it is. So.
And thank you, Paula, for your firsthand experience, because that's part of the reason I wanted to have the conversation today, is if we're going to dress up our children in costumes and they want to wear scary costumes and kind of the, you know, the whole culture of death that's okay on Halloween, why can't we continue it for children so that they feel comfortable with death? Let them have the funerals for their pets. Let them be there as grandma or grandpa are dying, to talk with them, to touch them, to see them when they've passed. If we were to normalize death from the time children were little, that would reduce so much of the fear that surrounds death in our society, to make it just a part of life, that process, that planning, where will I be once I die, what will happen with my body, those same kind of plans we make with the birth of a child, when we're coming into the world, we should be having the same joyous conversations, the same community conversations about death. Anita, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have always had this dream, being both a farmer once upon a time and someone who loves to feed people. I would love to be buried under an avocado tree or an apple tree or an orange tree. And one of my fantasies has been, I think every city should have like an orchard, a graveyard orchard that gets tended to, where weak people could scatter their loved ones' ashes. And my real dream would be for that to be somewhere where that homeless people and hungry people could go to get some food. And that's what I love that idea of being recycled through the earth and through the trees and the food and the people, and you live on in a really positive, nurturing way in that way. So that's my kind of dream.
Thank you, Nita. I love that, because that's along the lines where I was talking about being part of the forest, go back into the natural world. In Sweden, there's a company that will take your bodies to compost, to nurture. Mm-hmm. And so they freeze dry the body to remove all the water, and then breaks up into powders. And then they bury what's left shallow enough so that there is oxygen to actually cause composting. So you're very close to having your dream. And I do think it's a beautiful kind of way of continuing the life to death cycle. Life goes on in some other form as part of feeding the community. Thank you for calling in. And our last quick call of the day, Charlie, I'm sorry I'm running out of time, but in 30 seconds or less, what's on your mind today?
Okay. Real quick, death coming as a surgeon, death should come as a friend, not an enemy. And I think there's Guy Clark's thing about when he dies, he wants to be pushing up homegrown tomatoes from his homegrown tomatoes song. And there's also the Zoroastrian sky burial where they're put on top of towers.
Yes.
Great show. And I could think a lot more, but anyway.
Thank you,
and
Charlie.
Of course, there's the Irish Wake and the New Orleans Second Line.
Yes. Well, and I think this is a conversation that, again, won't just be one time, because it's ongoing. I think it's something we need to talk about. Make it joyful. Make it part of our family conversations. It might be our topic of conversation for Thanksgiving.
For Thanksgiving. I knew you were going to say that.
The family Thanksgiving. This has been A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation by joining us on Facebook. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, you can podcast the show or find previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. I appreciate you being a part of the conversation and supporting Public Radio KCBX. We'll continue our conversation next Tuesday.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha-la-la-la. For a while. Sha la 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 la. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sometimes when you're doing simple things around the house, maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tied to you like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me in your heart for a while. Hold me in your thoughts. Take me to your dreams. Touch me as I'm falling. I will be right now. pleasant stream. Keep me in your heart for a while. These wheels keep turning, but they're running out of steam. Keep me in your heart for a while.